this is real. Like, life is real. It's not just some like game we can play where we can waste a bit of time. It was just like, I felt like I woke up, because you really don't know how much time you have. And I felt like I had wasted so much time living in my head. I had to just like step out of my head.
In this episode, my guest Jenna Irving shares how the death of her mentor impacted her life. He wasn't just a professional mentor, but he was really like a life mentor, and he provided her with guidance and solutions pretty much to every problem. She talks about how his passing was actually a wake-up call for her. It reminded her that life is real and time is not infinite. She shares how she lost her own compass and was consumed by anxiety and stress, and she was always living in her head. However, after her mentor passed, Jenna started taking more time to work on herself. She started meditating and getting outside of her head and focused more on the relationships in her life. And she manifested some changes in her life by pivoting fully to a writing career. Ultimately, Jenna's mentor's passing led her to live a more authentic life, focusing on what matters and fulfilling her passions. Join us as we dive deeper into her pivotal moment and explore how she emerged stronger from it. I'd like to give a thank you to Mickey, Tracy, and Emily for sponsoring two episodes of the show each month. The Patreon allows me to try new software, upgrade hardware, try out some marketing, and continue bringing these important stories to the public. So thank you. Information about the Patreon can be found in the show notes for this episode. And with that, I'm happy to share this new episode of the Life Shift podcast with my guest, Jenna Irving. I'm Matt Gilhooly, and this is The Life Shift. Candid conversations about the pivotal moments that have changed lives forever. Hello, my friends. Welcome to the Life Shift podcast. I am here with a new connection, Jenna. Hey, Jenna.
Hey. Hey, thanks for having me, Matt.
Thanks for being here. I know we've been talking about this for a while and trying to get together so that we can have this conversation, and I think I'm going to really relate to what you're going to share today. And I think it's important that people like you come on this show or any other show where you can share your story and your experience in it, and really just those human moments, because I don't think there's enough people out there having these conversations. And so I'm just so honored when people are like, yes, Matt, I will come on the show and I will share something with you. And so I appreciate you just being here and being willing to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate you thinking of me and having me on.
And we talked to, before we started recording, this is possibly Jenna's first guest appearance on a podcast, even though she considered starting a podcast in the past. So I hope it's a good experience and then you're ready to do your own and kind of make it as part of your business or whatever you choose to do.
Yeah, I'm excited to be a guest today. Yes.
It's always a little nerve-wracking, right? We're like, oh, what are we going to say? But hopefully we just have a really candid conversation about this journey of your life and how this specific pivotal moment has impacted you and what you've kind of learned from it and what we can kind of teach others that might feel so alone in something very similar. So I just appreciate you. So in that vein, I think it would be great if you could somewhat paint the picture of what Jenna's life was like, you know, up leading up to that moment. Like, what were you doing? Like, give us a little bit of backstory to kind of this pivotal moment that we're leading up to.
Yeah. So I feel like my life is made up of so many shifts, but the shift we're going to talk about just leading up to this one, I think I had like so many people gotten so consumed by life, just, you know, the routine and running around and getting stuck in my head to the point where I was just, I kind of lost my navigation a bit. I had finished my degree, which, as you know, when you're in academics, it's like all left brain, and you kind of lose that soul side of you where you know that self compass. You know, you're so consumed by, you know, just life, working full time, and I'm a parent, and it was just consuming, and moved not long before that, and just being consumed. So I just gotten to the point where I was, you know, a bit regressed back to just living in anxiety and stress and catastrophizing in my head and trying to always prevent, you know, any sort of conflict from occurring. So just really just that moment of being consumed, you know, where we lose kind of our compass of being able to, where our thoughts are starting to think us rather than we're thinking them, kind of thing.
I'm wondering too, if maybe this is familiar to you, and when you were like growing up, did you feel like you were living kind of like a checklist life in which, you know, society, whoever that is, tells us that we have to do this, then you need to get your degree, and then you need to get this job, and then you need to have a family, and then you need, does that play into kind of how you were feeling here? It was like you were really kind of creating, or you were following that path that we were told to, and really just focused on like containing everything within that road.
I think I had gotten into that. I think before I'd been a bit of a rebel about the conventional path. Like I did my first year of university, and though I loved it, it was, you know, a life-changing year in Chicago. At the end, I was just like, you know, I don't know what I'm supposed to do yet. So why would I go into debt for uncertainty? Like, So I traveled for a bit, eventually met my husband. And I think eventually we did try to do that. We tried to build, you know, the American dream and all of that. But it ended up just being like, you know, the American stress load.
Which is, I think that's what it's masked as.
Yeah. So I think part of that leading up to it was being a bit consumed by that. And eventually we moved and decided, you know, just let's just recalibrate completely and find a balance again. So I think being consumed by it all was just moving me to find that balance, I guess, if that makes sense.
I get it. I think that when you're taking on all the responsibilities of like getting a degree, having the family, having all the things, it's hard to think outside of that bubble. And is that kind of what you were saying? Like you lost that compass of feeling things outside of whatever was in your hands-on control?
Yeah, I think I think we get so lost in it all that just somewhere along the way, I just got consumed by the worry, because the more we are committed to this outside success and all of these things we're supposed to be and supposed to do, I guess it just feels like as you grow older and you have a family, just the worries and everything just increases and kind of takes over. It takes over when you're not paying attention.
Tell us a little bit more about leading up to that, this moment in your life that really changed things. It's one that we're going to talk about today.
Yeah. So I've had this, a mentor for 16, almost 17 years. And not like a mentor in the sense of like, if you would combine, just to give you kind of an idea, not just like a professional mentor, it was like a life mentor. And I really lucked out when it came to life mentors. Like if you would combine, like imagine like Tuesdays with Maury with Dumbledore, Gandalf, Yoda, like all in one, like you're a super soul mentor. I really lucked out. So he was the one who had a solution to every problem. Like it was just who could always set you back on track. And I think those years leading up to when he left, I was so consumed with my mind and my worries and stress and everything that I almost couldn't hear his advice anymore. Even though he was continually giving me the solutions, I couldn't hear them because I was so in my own way.
How did you guys meet? How did you get this mentor in your life?
I met him through my husband. He was kind of a family friend of my husband's family.
And it's so interesting too, when we find these people in our lives, to go from like, I just met this person. How does someone become, you know, like a mentor, a life mentor with all those attributes after meeting them? You know, I think it's so weird to think back to my friends and try to think back to the moment we met, and then how did they become my friends? And you know, so how did you like venture into this space? I mean, have you ever thought about that? It's very odd to think, like, how did we become friends after just meeting randomly and how did we create the relationship that we have? But in your case, it's so interesting because, you know, you describe this person as a, like a life soul mentor that's like a guide, I guess, in some capacity. Like, how does someone graduate to that level in your life that you can accept, you know, forgetting the time where you kind of got lost in your own space, but like how that leading up to that, like, how do you accept that in your life? Oh, like some random person, and now they can be the solution maker and someone that you trust enough to kind of follow the guidance.
I know many people probably won't see it this way, but you know, there are just those few people in your life who just feel like chosen for you. It's like there was some prearrangement where you were supposed to, your paths were supposed to intersect at such and such point. And that's really how it felt. And I was always just kind of seeking wisdom and truth and all of those things. So I think being open is what brought it in. And I'm also a skeptic at heart. So, and he knew that as well, but so I'm not just like, we'll trust anyone. So this person was just very special, very like one of those intersecting path kind of people.
And so through the 16, 17 years, they were your, I guess, I mean, earlier you said you lost your own compass. Was he somewhat of your compass in a way?
I wouldn't say he was my compass, but he would always, always help me recalibrate my own compass, if that makes sense.
So you had to have the awareness to bring it to him, or would he be kind of like, hey, wake up?
yeah, there'd be both times. Yeah, I mean, I think he was hoping I'd, you know, wake up sooner than I did just in those years of stress and being consumed. Because before I wasn't like that. I think it was, you know, you're more free in your 20s and it's just like, it's okay. But then you get in your 30s and things are like, got to do this and this. And, you know, all the ducks feel like they have to be in a row. And
yeah, and we put that on ourselves for some reason. I'm not sure why we do it. Like you said, it's the American dream, but I think it's just cover. It's just the name for stress.
Exactly.
So in your explanation of him, you briefly mentioned before he left. And so I'm assuming, you know, this moment in your life that changed a bunch of things is related to that. What, how did he leave?
So so everyone, I mean, he wasn't just my, you know, mentor, he was many people. So it was like the one person who would never really had any problems, but we all go to him for our problems. But so we always thought he would always be there just because he was the strongest. Right. But he got sick within a very short span and then passed away very, very quickly within a matter of months. It was just beyond, like, nobody was ever believing he was going to leave. We're like, oh, he's sick, but he'll be fine. Like, if anyone's going to be fine, it's going to be him. But then he passed away within, I think just within like 6 months of us all finding out that he was sick, and at a young age of 73. So
when you found out that he was sick, and through this period of, oh, he'll be fine, were you still in that phase of your life in which you felt kind of losing that compass, or the way you were describing it? Were you still like in that, or were you now, did the fact that he was sick trigger anything in those changes, or was it more later on?
So I think I had started the awakening process just because I started focusing less on myself, which I think was the big reason why I had kind of lost my compass, because I started making everything about me. I was in just this me mindset and just being ruled by that I, which I always have found, and my mentor has always kind of said very lightly that, you know, our lives really reset when we have kind of more of a we mindset, or we get out of that me mindset.
I think it's natural that humans can kind of like fall into that me, because a lot of times we have to do a lot of things, right? And a lot of things are impacted by what we do, and we forget that there is this bigger picture. And sometimes it takes something bigger than us to kind of awaken us. And so I guess my thought or question would be, when you found out he was sick, even though you thought, you know, in this weird way, obviously not logically, but in like a spiritual way that, that he was immortal, right? He wasn't going to, the sickness was just, he was sick briefly. It was not going to be a long-term kind of thing. Was there a part of you that thought, oh no, like I'm going to lose this, this mentor of mine that has helped me through so many different pieces, and that's what triggered the awakening? Or did something else kind of move you away from that, that me to we?
I mean, I really think the whole reset was when he left, when he passed away, when I found out. It was just like, it was just such a shock that, like you said, I just never thought it was going to happen. I mean, I had moments where I, you know, I would really worry about it, but then it was just like, no, he would want me to, you know, I guess he would have wanted me to just thought positively about it, I suppose. But yeah, so it was really just a shock completely.
Yeah, when he actually passed, it wasn't necessarily the diagnosis of his illness or whatever that may be. Have you in the past before his passing, had you lost anyone close to you before?
Yeah, people in my lives, but my life, this one, just because we were so close, it's just kind of that next level kind of loss.
The reason I ask is I talk to a lot of people, not necessarily on this podcast, but people I know. And I always, you know, it's probably because of my background, you know, having my mom die when I was so young, I've experienced death many times since. And it's a different experience every time. And of course, you know, different relationships create that. But I also know people that haven't experienced death. And so sometimes that can be really triggering because the first time is so shocking because you really haven't, like, I mean, you understand that other people die and stuff, but you don't understand what it's like when someone that close to you dies. And it sounds like this gentleman was almost at the level of like a parent, like a very like close knit relationship, if you will, that other people could relate to. And so when he died, was that like the, when you heard the news, was that like your trigger to be like, okay, it's time to make a couple changes here? It like created an awareness in you. Was it like a phone call or something like that?
Yeah, it was just absolutely. It was just like, wow. I mean, I have to wake up now. Like, there's no time to waste, you know, in my head anymore. Like, this is real. Like, life is real. It's not just some like game we can play where we can waste a bit of time. It was just like, I felt like I woke up because you really don't know how much time you have. And I felt like I had wasted so much time living in my head. I had to just like step out of my head. Like, and I had to just, yeah. I mean, the biggest wake up is just like stepping outside of my head and I got to do this.
What was like the first big noticeable change in your life after that? Like, what was that first big awakening step you took or something that you did differently? Because now you're like, oh, time is not infinite and I need to do something in my life. What changed first for you?
I think it was a slow progression of just getting outside of my head and not focusing so much on myself, that then things on the outside started falling more into place.
Anything in particular that like you started doing differently?
I think I just started taking more time to work on myself in a way of more meditating, more just, you know, ways of getting outside of my head.
You know, you mentioned going from me to we, but how did that manifest in changes in your life? Because I think sometimes like some people are like, oh, so-and-so passed away from this. And then that next day they're like, I'm going to run a marathon because I'm not going to get to that point. Or, you know, I'm going to quit my job because life is short and this is what's going to happen. So just curious if there was something like that. Like, I think when my mom died, I didn't understand death at the time and I didn't understand what that was going to be like. But I do, looking back, notice the things that I changed in my life to avoid the same pain. And so in that instance, I became a good student. I started getting good grades because in my mind, if I get good grades, my father wouldn't be upset and he wouldn't leave too. And so, you know, like those are like the things that I see that I was doing differently. It wasn't a good thing. But it was just like my protection. And so if you feel this awakening, like what changed about your life now that you were living in this we mentality more so than living kind of in your head, kind of self, you know, dealing with the self?
Like as I recalibrated, I got back to, you know, my initial passion of writing, which is what I love to do. And ironically, the last words he wrote to me in a text, which was in a different context, but ironically, it's the last thing I said, he said was write, write it. We spoke in French. I took like a, you know, a whole 180 of focusing fully on writing again. It's always been a part of me. You know, I had a book that I'd been working on for 5 years. And I think it was just within the year that he left. I finished it. I pivoted to focus fully on my writing career. I think I had been delaying a lot of things in my life just during those kind of years and that were in a pause sort of mentally. And I just started taking more action, more steps, more small steps towards goals that I wanted, that I thought maybe I couldn't achieve. But I think I feel like the biggest noticeable changes were more inside of, you know, not being consumed by anxiety, not being so consumed with, you know, just living in the head, that things on the outside started falling more into place. So it's kind of an inner, sort of that inner work first, and then everything on the outside just, and also when somebody passes away, it is like you go from this like hyper-focused angle on problems that really don't mean anything. And then you're just like, bam, you're shot up into the air in an aerial view and you see the big picture and you're like, oh my gosh, everything I ever worried about, like literally didn't matter. It's so focusing more on the relationships in my life. Yeah, you just really realize what matters. And that helps take away all the anxiety and the fears that you had before, because they just really didn't matter. I mean, our minds really make them matter, right?
Until we say them out loud and then we're like, oh, it's not so bad.
Yeah, or you compare it with something like death and you're like, maybe this really doesn't matter.
Would you say that after he passed, you leaned into living a more authentic life on the outside to match the inside, and kind of letting your passions and your heart-centered work kind of take charge?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah.
Because absolutely. Of that, to that point of like death, like all these little things that I'm worrying about don't matter.
Yeah. All the things that were taking up space. Like I cleared out the room and got space for all the things that do matter, and the room to focus on, like you said, fulfilling my passions and my authentic self, as we call it.
What were you doing before work-wise that you weren't like solely focused on writing? Did you leave that part behind? What was that?
I didn't leave it behind. I still transitioned. So it was just doing it more on the side, which I'd always done, because writing, at least, I mean, in my 20s, it wasn't such a easily to make into a career like now. Like there's so much other.
Yeah, it was all publishing houses at the time.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, of course, there were things like blogs and whatnot, but it had always been something I did on the side. But I had lost even that part of me that had always done it on the side just during all those consuming years.
I can relate to that because I think a part of me, and then maybe I'm just projecting here, but part of me feels that these passion projects such as writing, podcasting, art, creative things that feed our souls and like make us feel alive, many of us have put those things to the side because we feel that other people expect us to be successful in whatever that we're doing. And if we do that and we aren't successful, there's a fear there that like my art and my passion is not going to like do the thing that everyone else can see as successful. And so I can relate to kind of getting lost in that, like that performative state of like, everyone needs to see me do this, so I can't do that. Do you feel like that's why you didn't finish your book until after he passed away?
Yeah, I think part of it is just, one, also we have this idea we can't make money from what we love doing, which is just like a limited belief, right? But yeah, I mean, another reason I finished the book was just I couldn't really write that ending until I had, you know, fully made the 180 myself. Yeah, it's interesting.
Do you think you knew that at the time when you had kind of paused not finishing the book? Do you think you knew you needed that change? Or was it just like it just felt unfinished and so you just never finished it until you had that experience? Like, did you know?
Probably subconsciously I knew, but I didn't have the ending. Like, I just couldn't write it until, but then once I, you know, gone through that shift, it so easily came out.
When you look back at that version of you before he passed away, does it feel like a different version of you? Or what's the biggest change in your life right now?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely feels like a different version. I have just kind of, you know, 90% of the time that aerial view where I can see the bigger picture, you know, all the little things I used to worry about before just don't matter anymore. Yeah, I just, you know, that central compass of having, you know, that focus of what really matters is really life-changing.
Yeah, I had when my grandmother got sick, she became my mom basically after my mom died, and when she got sick and I watched her die, I remember towards the end she said something very similar to what you're saying, is that I wish I hadn't worried so much because all that matters is love in the end. And me having, you know, spent a lot of time trying to grieve my mom unsuccessfully for so long and then finally did, but having the ability to watch, you know, to be with my grandmother as she was passing away, I feel the same way that you did in the sense that none of this other stuff matters. Like, why am I working so hard in these areas that don't bring me joy, that I don't care about, to make other people money when I should be leaning into the things that I enjoy doing and want to do? Because I just watched this person die and they like told me to stop worrying about the things that don't matter. And then I just leaned into everything and tried to just do the things that serve me and not what might impress someone on the outside, which was my MO for so long because I was protecting myself. Yeah. So I totally believe what you're saying is that, like, you're just like, okay, I wasted so much time doing this, but I think that serves you, right? Do you think that, you know, it gives you a better perspective now?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we need that shift so that we can see the contrast. Absolutely. And, you know, for so long, my, you know, mentor had told me, you know, like, you know, whatever you do, just think positively. And I never really gotten it before, you know, I'm just like, what, like, think positively, life is hard. Like, what is it, you know? I mean, we have this new movement of toxic positivity, which I think is a bit of a dangerous thing if, you know, taken the wrong way. And what he meant by think positively is like, you know, yes, you can be sad. You can, you know, feel whatever you need to, you can feel sad, but like, don't go into despair, you know, or you can be, you know, angry about something, but don't go into the thoughts that, you know, start labeling things as just kind of those destructive mental habits that happen when we go through things. And I think I really realized just how important it is to think positively and how much it protects us from falling into those mental traps, because it just takes one small thought. And if you identify with that thought, you know, that could make your whole week bad, you know, falling into that discouragement.
It could force you to make decisions that are not really aligned because you're making them out of fear, or you're making them out of worry. Like I said before, it's like sometimes the stories that we tell ourselves in our head are much scarier than if we were to say them out loud, or you probably relate to this as a writer, putting those words on paper kind of puts context around everything and gives you a better view. And that aerial view, I think, is a good, you know, analogy or a good example of like how we can look at things and see the bigger picture and not like the minutia that's, like freaks us out for that brief moment that could then spiral and snowball into a big mess. Was the think positively the one that stands out the most of the like the best long-term advice that he gave you? Or is there something else that he shared that you kind of use as a mantra?
I mean, I feel like there's so many things. And I don't know if this makes sense, but so many of the things, like, I feel you can't even put into words, but big part of it is just stepping outside of the self, which is like, I think one of the biggest shifts we can make in life is when we start living a life in serving rather than in giving, rather than always thinking what we're going to get and what we're going to receive and what might happen to us and what might happen, you know, like all of these things, me, everything, me, like all of our thoughts start with the word I. And one of the biggest shifts we make is when we step outside and like we see the world as really big and we all live together here, and finding ways we can serve, I think is just huge. That just once we start living that life of giving and serving, it takes us outside of the I, and it's a huge antidote to all the anxiety that we feel. I feel
stepping outside of yourself. Were you that way before that cloudy period, or is this a new thing post your mentor passing?
Yeah, I think I had degrees of it, but not near to the extent that I do. I mean, I was still like in my 20s and, you know, somewhat immature thinking. So I don't think so. I was at to the degree that I woke when he left.
And how you feel now. The reason I ask that is I wonder if there is something that we could share with others that could help them step outside of themselves. And if not, do we think that someone needs an unfortunate event that would trigger this?
I mean, I like the idea of people being able to live, I mean, learn through joy rather than pain. I want to believe it's possible. and maybe that's what these stories and what you do can helps people to learn these things before we have to experience them. I mean, I think that's a part of the gift of storytelling, right? That we learn these lessons through stories.
That's the hope, right? That we don't have to make our own mistakes. We can just learn from people that have already done it, unfortunately, in a fortunate way.
I think if we're open and to kind of receiving the lessons behind these stories, yeah.
I ask that question because I think I'm jaded. I think. I had to go through all of that in my life, losing my mom, watching my grandmother die, spending years and years and years, what quote unquote failing at my grief journey. I think I had to do all that in order to be the person that I am today, in order to sit down with hopefully hundreds of people and hear their stories and find connections within them and understanding within them. But I don't think if I hadn't gone through it myself, and this is the jaded part, I don't know if I would be here. Do you, I know you said you have to hope that you can learn through joy. So I would assume that you're not quite as jaded as I am, but.
Yeah, I think I probably had to go through it as well. I think we all have kind of long roads we can take and shorter roads. I think there's always these things in life that kind of push us, like, you know, to try to break these patterns in our life, but we either listen or we don't, or we wait until the big event that we have to, you know, not that life is doing this to us, but along the way, I think we're given these sort of pushes to break those patterns. But if we don't listen, you know, it might take the big event.
Well, and it's also to your point, you mentioned, you know, all along your mentor had been telling you to think positively, but it didn't really, quote unquote, click until a certain point, right? And so I've talked to other people where it's like the right words at the right time change so many things, but those same words at a different time could just be extra noise.
Yeah, right. And I mean, and it sounds so cliche to think, you know, think positively. I think it annoys a lot of people these days.
Look at the bright side.
I know it's more about how we react to things that happen. It doesn't mean we don't feel things, of course. It means how do we process them, you know, because we also easily go into despair when things happen or get discouraged, but when we don't have to. I think what made the big difference of that think positively, I mean, it sounds just like such empty words, but really it's not. I think what I saw, you know, when he left was all the things I created by not thinking positively, all the things I opened in my life with negativity and thoughts and not listening to that advice, because and behind those words is actually like so much. You're really protecting yourself when you're thinking positively because of what you open when you think negatively.
Right. Yeah. Like long-term protection in a sense. Yeah. And I think you're right. I think people kind of sometimes think positively as like this, oh, well, duh. But, you know, like at the same time, you have to like live and breathe that. And it's not an in the moment thing, but it's more of a long-term kind of analysis of a moment of the positive side of this and how I can avoid going down the really steep hill that is so easily tripped and fall down. It's very easy to live in those moments, and it's hard to get out of those moments too.
Right. And that's the protection. That's the protection is why you don't go into those moments by thinking negatively. Cause like you said, it is so hard to get out.
Well, I mean, I think too, I tell people this all the time. I don't tell them, I talk to them about it, that if you've ever been depressed, and not clinically, just have a depressive feelings, it's a lot easier to stay depressed than it is to get out of it. There's a lot more work that's needed when you fall farther and farther down. There's a lot more work, and it's a lot harder, and it's so much easier to just stay there. I think the same can be said of the other side, that if you are up in this happy space, living authentically, leaning into what brings you joy, what helps others around you, you're living in that space, it's a lot harder to fall out of that space. Would you agree that this thinking positively for you keeps you up there?
Yeah, because you start to learn or identify what will make you fall again. And one of my favorite ways to like kind of think about it is, in order for us to like stay encouraged, like if you think of the word, like the Latin word heart, which cœur, like encouraged, which I like to think of the word of like living in your like heart space. I know it sounds cheesy, but if you're thinking of living outside of your mind, but when you're encouraged, you're living in the heart. And we always get these just discouraging thoughts, which take us out of that heart space and put us in our mind. So the discouraging thoughts will come and be like, you know, see, you haven't done anything with your life. See, you're not going anywhere. See, like nothing's happened. Whatever these discouraging voices come, wherever they come from, that discouraging, they take us out of that heart space. And when we learn to identify, like, you know, these thoughts are not serving us at all, and I don't want to go live in that headspace anymore, thank you. I think it's helpful to recognize, you know, it's the thoughts. Being positively doesn't mean be happy, huh? Like, you know, and like, it doesn't, that's not what it means. It means, you know, living in that heart space of, you know, knowing who you are and not falling into that trap of discouragement.
And letting the encouraged part win when there still are those discouragement pieces.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, as you were saying it, I equate that to this podcasting journey for me. Leaning into this, I've never had a more fulfilling project. And I think because I am trying to do my best to lean into this project heart first and trying in this, what you've been saying, you know, in this we mentality, is that this show is not about me. And sometimes this is not about my guests, but it's about the collective we around that are listening to these stories in hopes, and this would come back a little bit to me, but in hopes that that little boy version of me that felt so alone in the experience in hopes that someone that felt like I did doesn't feel like that. And so there's a we there, but there's also, you know, that heart-centered me that wants everyone to like feel like a big hug. You know, like we're not alone. Like we're all human. We're going to experience things a little bit differently, but there's a lot of commonalities, a lot more than there are differences, I think. At least what I found in this journey, in this podcasting journey so far. So I love that idea of encouragement being in the heart and discouragement taking us away from that. And I think a lot of people, especially those that lean into projects like writing or creative more projects like that, it can be so easy to hear the discouraging parts. But if this part is stronger, I think it wins.
Exactly. Yeah. And learning to identify it slowly, because it's not going to just, you're not just going to wake up one day and everything's, you know, you just see everything as great. Like life is hard, but not living in that place of discouragement, not being stuck in the head, learning to identify the patterns of what, you know, oh, that's a discouraging thought, like learning to identify them so that you don't get discouraged. Because, I mean, like, I'm sure you're starting out your podcast journey or anybody starting out on anything. Oh, you get so many discouraging thoughts, right? Like, this isn't going, see, nothing's going anywhere. This isn't going to work or this isn't going to happen. And you're like, thank you, discouraging thoughts, not helpful. And then you stay encouraged.
I feel like as long as the scale is balanced where, or not balanced, but where the heart, the encouraged part related to your heart is much heavier than those discouraging things. It's like, that's why I feel like I can plow through, and I have, you know, in this first year that I've been doing it, I've really plowed through the noise in the space, right? The noise that tells you, are enough people listening? Did that one change something? Did you move the mark? Did the needle move? I truly feel that not much of that matters, because I still feel like we're serving the heart, the collective heart, of this journey. I'm curious how you feel your writing has changed now that you're post losing your mentor and kind of awakening to this new version of you. Has your writing changed?
Yeah, I think I found my true voice again, which I think, you know, everybody writes, but once you find your true voice, that's when things start rolling. Like, so yeah, I mean, when you're living in that encouraged space and when you've built it strong, like you've just said, you know who you are and you find your voice and you can put that in everything that you do. And that's when change happens. That's when impact occurs.
and you're feeling good about this switch into writing and creating this new space for you, right? You said you're doing this full time.
Yeah, I just started, yeah, full time. And yeah, I mean, it has its challenges for sure. But heart-centered. But yeah, it's my passion. It's what I've dreamed of since I was a kid. So it feels truer than, you know, anything I'm meant to do.
Do you feel more alive doing this? In this version,
yeah,
of
absolutely.
You?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that's a product of all those years that you had with your mentor. And then kind of like where everything was like, oh, I'm taking all those things now. And these ones that didn't quite make sense at first, or I didn't listen to because I wasn't ready to listen to them. You're suddenly probably looking back on some of those moments going, oh, okay, I get it now.
This is what he meant. Okay. Yeah. Like, yeah. I feel like all of the lessons were like somewhat like activated when he left. Like, I mean, it's interesting. The biggest lesson he left me was leaving, ironically, which I guess is what it took, which is, yeah.
It's sad. And it's also, unfortunately, part of life is this, the end of it, but it's not an end, because in some sense, your mentor is at least living on in you, if not all the other people that he left a mark on.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
What do you think he would say to you now, that if he could see you doing what you're doing in the life that you're leading now?
It's hard to sum it up. just live in joy. Just live in joy and just know everything will always work out. no matter what.
He'd probably be super happy that you're out of the cloud that you were in, and that, you know, you're doing the things that matter. He might be upset that you don't need him as much anymore, right? Because you're living in some of in some of those moments. I always find it interesting asking the guests if you could go back to that version of you that was kind of feeling very lost and very focused on yourself because you were probably protecting yourself from something. But if you could go back with this, how you feel now, is there anything you could say to her that would help her out of it sooner?
I guess, as simple as it sounds, like everything's going to be okay. Like you really don't need to worry about anything or stress about anything. Like, oh, it just doesn't matter. It's all good. Like, it's all good. Like, even the bad stuff, it's going to be converted into something good anyway. So just don't worry.
And the irony there is that those versions of us probably wouldn't have listened, and yeah, we would have catastrophized whatever was happening after that. You know, I think it's important. I know sharing some of this story is hard to think back on and to realize the loss and the big part of it. But what I think people will get from your conversation or your story is that, you know, there are ways that we can get lost, but there are certainly ways to find ourselves again. And it doesn't have to take something tragic, you know, just, you know, as silly as you say it sounds, think positively. Not everything's happy and rosy and wonderful, but that you're not falling into despair. And so I think that, you know, that is the big takeaway, is that sometimes we're going to get lost, but we got to find our way back to the collective community and helping others and doing the things that serve us. Because by doing the things that serve our heart, we're helping others. I think, you know, just what you're doing by writing, you're helping others. What this podcast is hopefully doing is helping others. But it feels so good, and I'm sure the writing feels so good. So I just appreciate you coming on and digging a little deeper into some of these moments. Thank you for being a part of this.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for letting me share.
And if people want to see like the book, can you tell us a little bit about what your book is? I know it's out now and people can check
it
out.
Yeah, it's a bit of a unique one. It's called The Great Myopia. And it's a kind of a quest. It's actually an epic poem, kind of I'm a bit 12th century in my soul. So it's an epic quest poem. So it's a story actually that kind of leads people out of this hard, dark night of the soul. And there's a guide that kind of comes in different forms and sort of helps lead the person out. Eventually you'll find out how they get out of it, but it's definitely kind of a unique piece. But I sat down to write it as a novel, and it came out as this poem, and it's written in sonnet and verse. So,
and it sounds like it's running a little parallel with some of the experiences that you've had and your guide along the way. Maybe not in exactly the story, but
mm-hmm. Yeah, there's definitely some parallels there for sure.
Coming in, and I mean, oftentimes. The real experiences that we have create a much richer creative Absolutely. Output, I guess, or some kind of output for people, because it's humanity. So thank you again for being a part of this. We'll link to all of your information. They can find out where your book is and how to get a hold of that and check it out. So just thank you for being a part of this. And if you're listening to this episode and you like what you're listening to, I'd love a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. I don't know if it does anything for me beyond make me feel good. So that would be lovely. And until next week, have a wonderful day, whatever time you're listening to this. For more information, please visit www.thelifeshiftpodcast.com.